I'm DMA Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which is featured in A Clockwork Orange at Bag and Baggage Productions. The show runs through October 27th in Hillsboro, and we're going to talk about A Clockwork Orange, the stage play with music that Anthony Burgess, the novelist, adapted from his own work in 1962, and I hear it's nothing like the Stanley Kubrick film. So we're going to talk with artistic director Kathy Greer and associate artist Joey Copsey of Bag and Baggage Productions. We're also going to hear about the rest of their season, so stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. A bit of classical music in the morning. I'm DeMay Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio is artistic director and director Cassie Greer. Welcome for the first time to Stage and Studio.
Thank you, DeMay. I'm so excited to be here.
And with her is Joey Copsey. He's the associate artist at Bag and Baggage. Welcome. Great. Also first timer.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And so you've just opened, they've just opened A Clockwork Orange, the stage play. And it's great to talk about this. I want to say congrats to your opening weekend. I had a couple of rave comments from the preview of the interview that I posted on Facebook. I usually post the KBOO page on Facebook before the interview, and a couple of people said, "We saw it. It's so great." So nice. I guess it went well.
That's good to hear. I mean, we're biased, but I think it felt like a good opening.
It's always hard to tell, but yeah. When you have a couple of people respond, it's always like more than like 10 people. Each person probably represents 10 or 20 people.
There we go.
So before we talk about the play, though, Cassie, let's talk about your history with Bag and Baggage. This is your inaugural year as artistic director.
It's true.
And you're only the second artistic director in the history of the company.
That is true. I am succeeding Scott Palmer, who is our founding artistic director, who started the company almost 15 years ago. He's a Hillsboro native, spent a lot of time in other parts of the world, and then came home to put a professional theater company right in the middle of downtown Hillsboro. And I've been fortunate enough to work for Bag and Baggage basically since I moved to Oregon in 2011. And I've worked in various capacities. I'm an actor by training, also a director. I do a lot of work with our education programs. I managed our capital campaign when we were building the Vault Theater, which is now our home in downtown Hillsboro.
Which actually has a vault in it.
It
does. A bank vault.
It does.
And that's why it's called The Vault, which I found out recently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if you come by on an off day, I will show it to you.
Yeah, it's huge door, man. I don't even know how you can move it.
I know. Yeah, it's a little heavy, but it's pretty cool. It's a former bank building, and so we retained that element of it.
So you got to figure out a way to make it a bomb shelter, especially for this play, I think. Well, you know, you live in Portland, yet most of your work has been dedicated to commuting to Hillsboro to work at Bag and Baggage.
It's true. It's work that I fell in love with. You know, we're, as a company, we're committed to staging sort of provocative reinterpretations of classic works of world literature. And as a person who has always loved the classics, seeing the ability to continually make them relevant and put a little twist on them so that people come in the door thinking that they know something about the story they're going to see, but they walk away with something they never would have expected has been a really, really exciting thing for me to experience.
When you say classics, though, I mean, a 1987 play is not necessarily a classic.
That is fair.
I mean, I guess for some people it is.
A modern classic.
I remember 1987 way, way back there. So,
true.
But, you know, so obviously Bag and Baggage is an important theater to you.
It is. It is, and it has been. Yeah. And it's been my artistic home for most of the past decade.
So that says a lot.
Yes, and I'm honored to be able to be in the position that I am now, and we have an amazing group of artists and administrators making it happen day in and day out. So I'm pretty fortunate.
And it's important to have women artistic directors too.
Yes.
You know, and it's growing.
We have an all female leadership team. Beth Lewis is our managing director, who is another phenomenal individual and artist.
And she's been with Bag and Baggage since the beginning too, I believe.
She actually has been for the past 5 years.
Oh, 5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
She worked for Curious Comedy here in Portland and then at the Pasadena Playhouse and in New York. And so she's got a wealth of experience.
Well, in reading your bio, I also learned that you're one of, I thought this was interesting. One of 300 people in the country certified to teach a specialized form of voice work.
That
I mean,
is
I was
true.
Reading about your voice, this voice work, because I'm interested, you
yeah.
know. But then they said there's only, you know, on the website itself, it says there are only 300 people in the country who can teach this.
It is true. So I'm a teacher of Fitzmaurice voice work, which is one of four or five predominant vocal methodologies that's taught in actor training programs. So I had the opportunity to study and be certified with Catherine Fitzmaurice, who invented this work.
Wow.
And yeah, it's a growing global community, but really there's only probably under 30 people that get certified in this every year.
Wow.
So,
well, congrats
yeah.
on that.
Hey, thanks.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Thanks.
And Joey Copsey, you're an associate artist of Bag and Baggage Production. So what's your history with the company?
Oh, I've been with the company since 2015, I believe. Yes, about 5 years now. You know, mainly working as an actor, and I'm one of many associate artists. So basically just means that we're available.
It's like a resident company, sort of?
Yes, yeah. yes. Well, there's actually residents at the company, and then associates
okay.
are you know, just generally actors who are also available to help out with various other things, like showing up for KBOO interviews.
Oh, not, so not just acting, but
not just
all
acting,
around,
but all around
help.
Helping out with
yes,
the
yes, all
the
around production work.
Yeah.
Well, that's important to have. What makes you committed to Bag and Baggage? Do you live in Hillsborough?
I don't. I live in Milwaukee.
Well, see, you commute as well.
I do, yes. But it's primarily because of the work that Bag and Baggage does that I really have kind of found an artistic home there as well. Just, I really love working with Bag and Baggage. I love the shows that we do, mainly those, the idea of that very literary work and language-focused work is something that I enjoy doing quite a lot.
Well, in case you just joined us, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm DMA Roberts. My guests are Cassie Greer, Artistic Director, and Joey Copsey, Associate Artist of Bag and Baggage Productions. They've just opened A Clockwork Orange, adapted into a play with music by Anthony Burgess himself from his 1962 dystopian satire of crime, violence, youth gangs, and brainwashing, I assume, you know. So I haven't read the novel, but I saw
yeah,
that
no,
film.
That's
pretty
accurate.
Close.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
The show runs through October 27th in Hillsborough. And you can get more info at baggage.org. And I have that link as well as well as the podcast of the interview later today at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. Now, Cassie, I remember watching Stanley Kubrick's film version when I was young. And it was so shocking.
Yes.
It had such a negative impact on me. I found the story of a violent teenage gang that basically is, you know, raping and pillaging the neighborhood set to Beethoven's music. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was quite shocking.
Yeah.
So when I talked to you about this last month, I did ask you, so why would you do this? You know?
Did ask me that, yes. Which is an excellent question, because I think most people hear A Clockwork Orange and that's their primary association is a Kubrick film. But it's really interesting to note that, so as you mentioned, Burgess wrote the novel in 1962. The film adaptation was done almost a decade later. And Anthony Burgess really wasn't thrilled with what Kubrick did with it and also the reputation that the story got from the film and the fact that he became known for the singular piece of his artistic work when, in fact, he was a very, very prolific author and composer and literary critic. And so the fact that this is the one thing people knew him for and that it was so scandalous was just frustrating to him. So sort of in response to all of this, he did the stage adaptation in the mid-80s. And really, the novel is about these huge moral and ethical questions about human nature and free will and choice. And when Kubrick was making the film, he was interested in those questions as well, but he was also interested in how far can we push the boundaries of cinema and what is acceptable to be displayed on screen and shock value. And, you know, he's coming off that post-sexual revolution, and there's a lot more that was permissible versus when Burgess was writing it in 1962. And Burgess was like, man, you know, you leaned into that and you totally missed the point. So the creation of the stage play was sort of an attempt to reframe the story on some of the questions that Burgess really wanted addressed. And you can see that reflected particularly in Joey's character. Joey plays all the actors except one. There are 9 actors in the show, and 8 of them play a multitude of roles each. So one of the characters that Joey plays is the prison chaplain, and that is the character through whom this moral and ethical voice sort of persists throughout the play, asking some of these really deep questions about, like, how essential is free will, and if you are only being good because you are made to be good, not because you've actually made a choice about being good, is that actually goodness, and is that actually better than if you were just evil but were free to do so? So a lot of really interesting stuff to grapple with, both, you know, in the sort of Cold War era that Burgess was originally writing this in, as well as today, when, you know, in both situations, government limiting individual freedom is still a concern and a question. And how do we operate in our society where there's, you know, we could go on and on about this.
Well, Anthony Burgess wrote it. It was first produced actually in 1987, right?
Yeah,
so
the play.
It's,
yes.
Obviously, from what you're saying, it still holds up.
I do think it still holds up. And there's another really interesting sort of through line that comes in the play, more so than even the novel, about creation versus destruction, and living in a society where nobody really teaches, particularly young men, how to channel energy into something creative. And that, I think, is a hugely resonant theme for today when we look at you know, all of the current conversations about toxic masculinity and all of the violence that is propagated in our culture by particularly young white men and all of these mass shootings, right? And I think that's a hugely relevant theme that does show up much more in the play script than in the film or even in the novel. So that's been a really interesting thing for us to sort of sink our teeth into as well.
So the play has an ensemble of 9 actors, but they're playing over 40 characters. And Joey, how many characters do you play?
Oh, geez.
Four characters.
Yeah.
Four primary, and then
a couple. Yeah.
In A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
And so,
do you have a lot?
Well, you know, I also want to talk about the music. How's mm-hmm. it been? Can you describe the music for us?
Well, it's based on the theme. Beethoven provides the primary themes for the musical development, and as is written in the script, because Burgess was a composer, and so the script itself it's a funny script to read, actually, when you first get it, because the play is not that long, and then half of the script is sheet music.
Wow.
That he wrote himself.
So it's mostly music then.
There's a lot of music throughout, and I'm not actually usually a musical actor, so this has been a fun little journey to try to figure out how to use that. Not well.
So I'm gonna,
well enough.
I'm going to interject here, just because. So Burgess is pretty clear that the subtitle is A Play with Music. And in thinking about the approach to this, you know, I, as the director, was really interested in this being a very human story. And so I really leaned away in the casting from people who are like musical theater performers, because there's something more gritty and rugged about like human beings just using their voice and it happens to be in song than somebody who has a super polished sound. Mm-hmm. So people like Joey, who are like, singing.
I'm rough, to say the least.
No, you're great.
But you, like, wanted that.
That's what I want. And that's what I think is interesting. You know, I mean, and you alluded to my voice teacher training, and, you know, singing is just speaking on a pitch, and I've got experience working with people who are like, I don't sing. So I think that made me a little bit more eager or willing to do this.
Well, there's something when people are, and this is, you know, for any other play, it's probably fine, but there's something about when people are so skilled at singing, at musical theater, and then it sort of takes you out of this world, right? And all of a sudden, oh, okay, so these are very fine singers, and so you're concentrating
right.
on them being singers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but I mean, these guys, they sound great.
It's actually surprising. Like, it came together really well. And thinking about that concept, the theme of destruction versus creation, we really had to destroy the music and destroy Shakespeare to create something new. But it turns out really well.
Well, when you listen to English music hall songs, mm-hmm. I mean, they're very much the common people singing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And so it sounds like that's sort of the feel, you know, that you wanted to have, or Burgess wanted to have in the play.
Yeah, I think so. And it's such an interesting mashup of classical, because almost all of it is set to parts of Beethoven symphonies or Beethoven sonatas
Which isn't actually that easy to say.
No, indeed.
So, Joy, do you have a sample either of the lines for the dialect or the music?
For the chaplain character that I play, he has these big chunks of moralizing dialect, and I kind of base... when creating the voice for him, which is the first thing I do when reading a script and looking at a character, I think about what their voice might be. And for this one, I decided to do a little bit of a Richard Burton / Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, yes.
Little Welsh.
The Cossapock.
Yeah. Thinking about that great radio play of, I listened to Under Milkwood
Come
a number
lot.
Of times. To begin, at the beginning.
I like that, though. That's a good, something to emulate.
Exactly.
They sounded wonderful.
Yeah. Who sounds better than Richard Burton? So for instance, right after the chaplain discovers that Alex, the main character, is going to be getting the treatment, you know, the brainwashing treatment, the chaplain's a little drunk and he wanders in, says, "So you ought to be made into a good boy, little 6655321. Never again will you have the desire to commit acts of violence or to offend in any way whatsoever against the state's peace. I hope you take that all in. I hope you're absolutely clear in your own mind about that."
And this is the chaplain,
That's
right?
the chaplain, yeah.
Yeah, he's so comforting.
I do a Scottish dialect briefly for one other character as well.
Wow. Yeah, the whole brainwashing stuff, though. Yes. I do remember that from the movie, and that's in this.
Cool how we do it, though.
Yeah.
It's like, honestly.
So cool.
It is. No, it is. Well, one of the things, if you don't mind me.
No, go ahead.
One of the things that I find really, that I find really intriguing about this, about the style, the way that we've done this play, and that people are talking about when they come with the expectation of the film and the sort of visceral, hard-to-watch shock value of the film is what they're afraid of when they come to see the show. But what they walk away from is how remarkably pleasant and interesting the artistic decisions have been made with the show. So it's very representational. Not, presentation, or maybe I got that wrong, but...
Rather than realistic,
exactly. So we do some really interesting projection effects, particularly in that brainwashing scene, that is really just one of the best effects I've seen in theater. It's really fun to see as an audience member.
It's been cool to develop. We have a really great creative team sort of working on behind the scenes. And one of the things that makes it sort of the less realistic in addition to the projection is that there's a lot of violence. That's sort of something that you cannot
escape.
Do you
want to talk about like the fight choreography?
Yeah. So it's an inescapable part of the story, right? But again, sort of in this stage play being an answer to the Kubrick, where you're really pushing the boundaries of like how much people can take observing this. I am much more interested in having the audience involved in a story. And for me, when that happens is when the audience is able to engage imaginatively and sort of enter into the experience with us. And that's one of the beauties of what the theatrical art form allows you to do. But in this particular situation, that sort of manifested itself in the way that we approached the violence. So instead of really specific combat choreography that really is trying to make it look realistic, we've gone in the opposite direction. And all of the fights are much more stylized, much more dance-like. So Mandy Khoshnevasan is our choreographer, and she has dialect coached the show, among a variety of other things. And she has created this sort of movement scape that we live in where there is never any doubt that anyone is actually being injured in this show. But I think that's part of what people are like, it makes it pleasant or really intriguing to watch. And my hope is that, they are able to enter into that with us.
It draws you in without you, making you want to look away.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. Anyway. Yeah.
I think stylized violence is, definitely a lot easier to take than like the film version.
Totally.
Where it was totally realistic.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think, if we're alienating people in the violence before we even get to like what the point of the story is.
What is the point? It's about redemption, isn't it? Or what is it?
It's about redemption and choice and creation versus destruction
and
choosing to do that
I think young people who are disenfranchised have that, it's not a matter of choice, but it's just a matter of you know, you can go into destruction or creation, but, you know, quite often destruction's a lot easier and more accessible, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think the impulse amongst, you know, particularly young men, is this destructive impulse as they're trying to find themselves and create themselves and without being properly...
Well, I think there's anger involved.
Absolutely.
What do you do with that?
What do you do with it? And how? And I think states and societies struggle constantly in determining how to craft policy, how to shape that. And part of the theme as well is that you can overreach when trying to do that, because it kind of passes with time as well. So it's how you direct that energy to get people through that hard part in their life before they grow up a little bit is one of the many themes. It's just, you know, that's embedded in the story.
Is it still an indictment of the criminal justice system too?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean,
it has to be.
That's
right?
Part of the satire of it.
Right.
I mean, the character.
Because they're not any better than...
No. Yeah. I mean, there's one of the characters is the Minister of the Interior, and it's, I mean, it's a great bit of satire on people who are in charge in a political or governmental way.
Very complex issues there.
Yeah. And indifferent to the human, the effects that their policies will have on actual human beings.
Which is terrifyingly resonant sometimes.
And it's, quite complex and, you know, definitely, it's sad that it's still timely, you know, all these themes. Bag and Baggage Productions presents A Clockwork Orange by Anthony Burgess, adapted from his own 1962 dystopian novel. It's directed by Cassie Greer and runs through October 27th at the Vault Theater. That's located at 350 East Main Street in Hillsboro. The show runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. And more info and tickets available at their box office at 503-345-9590 or online at baggage.org. And you can find that info at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio.
I will say, if you live in Portland like me and are like, Hillsboro is 70,000 miles away, I do take the Max Blue Line every
She's
day
kidding.
Of my
it's
life.
Not 70,000.
It's not. It's like 20. But I take it, the train runs basically to right behind the theater. So if you're stressing out and want to come see the show but just don't think you can handle the traffic, might I recommend public transportation?
Well, and that's a good recommendation because you do that every single
I do.
Day. So I want to also talk about the rest of the 2019-2020 season, the Games Afoot, or Homes for the Holidays. Tell us about that. That's in December.
Yes.
The holiday play.
Yes, that's a really cool Ken Ludwig play that is, it's based on the life of William Gillette, who is the actual historical actor who popularized our perception of Sherlock Holmes. So he was the one that took Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's stories and was like, these would make great plays. Can we put this on stage? And then he was the one that added like the deerstalker cap and the pipe, things that are so ubiquitously associated with Sherlock Holmes these days. So it's a fictional story about that guy and his actor friends and this holiday whodunit. So it's got farce elements. It's got historical fiction elements. It's a super fun play.
And of course, that's his tagline, the game's afoot, right?
Exactly.
And then that's December 5th through the 23rd, the last show of this year.
Yes.
And then you have something like a whole original play by Anya Pearson,
yes,
The Measure of Innocence, which is part of the Problem Play Project. You want to talk about that?
Absolutely. So this is our second year of this initiative called the Problem Play Project. And as a company that is committed to doing sort of major adaptations of classic work, Shakespeare has been sort of our bread and butter, but we have realized that we have been adapting this through just a very certain, Western European lens. And we've really tried to think about how we can be more expansive in our adaptation and also more representative of the diversity of cultures of people that call Hillsboro home. So our Problem Play Project commissions Oregon-based playwrights of color to take on the set of Shakespeare's plays that are known as the problem plays, because you can't really easily categorize them as comedy or tragedy or history. So we ask these emerging playwrights of color to adapt Shakespeare's problem plays through the sort of lens of their own cultural background and social understanding. So Anya is adapting Measure for Measure, sort of with the lens of the systemic unjust incarceration of Black, brown, and other marginalized races in our community and in our
state.
That's
an important project and an important statement.
Oh my gosh.
Because Measure for Measure, from Shakespeare's original play, is about unjust injustice and how it was committed against this one woman.
Yeah, and this just sort of amplifies it, so we can see the brokenness of our sort of national criminal justice system. And it's a really, really cool play. We've been in development of the script for the last several months.
Yeah, and it's a great project to offer to for young playwrights, too,
yes,
or for any playwrights. That's happening March 5th through the 22nd in 2020. I can't believe I'm saying 2020. Fallen Angels, that's April 30th through May 17th. And just briefly, give us a little...
Yeah, Noel Coward, one of his lesser-known plays. So
yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's centers around these two women. They share a mutual ex-lover who comes back into their lives. And
okay.
And
comedy ensues.
And comedy ensues, indeed.
And Joey, are you in any of these shows?
No, I'm only doing Clockwork Orange for the season.
It's probably going to tire you out, though. It sounds like it's a full deal, like, you know, physical, mental, emotional, and vocal.
You've got to put a lot into it. It's been a lot of work. I haven't had to work nearly as much as a few other people in the play, so I'm lucky in that regard. But it's been a lot of fun, though.
Well, you're having a great time with it.
We really are.
Yeah. So just one more time, The Clockwork Orange runs through October 27th at Bag and Baggage Productions in Hillsboro. And you can find more info at bag-baggage.org. So, Cassie Greer, Artistic Director and Director.
Yes.
Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Dima.
And Joey Copsey, Actor and Associate Artist. Thank you also. Thank you both for being here today.
Absolutely.
And having this conversation.
It was a joy. Thank you.
Before we go today, a personal shout out for a play my nonprofit, Meteorites, and our Theater Diaspora program is co-producing with Coho Productions. Just in time for Halloween, it's The Brothers Paranormal by Prince Gomovilas. It's about two Thai American brothers who are ghost hunters. They start a business, and their first clients are an African American couple who swear they are being haunted by a Thai girl ghost. It's funny and a little scary, and brings up issues of grief, loss, and displacement in cultural communities. The show runs October 25th through November 16th at Coho Productions. That's located at 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street in Portland, and more info at cohoproductions.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Ray Bodwell, and I'll have this show online later today at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as the podcast on iTunes. And you can like us at facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dima Roberts. We're going out with more music, and this one is Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, very important in A Clockwork Orange, another important song for Clockwork Orange. So find out more about the play at bag-baggage.org. All right. Take care.